We're about to go to Chocolate City.
Let's get it!
The capital of the United States.
Woo! You know, haters are haters, you know. They control the mouth.
Merry Christmas, little man!
Commitment to fucking playing defense.
I'm not eating cat food either.
What's this all about? We're on the kiss cam. Feel a little reluctant to take that.
How sweet.
That pig was really strong.
Look out, Nene and Butler. Butting heads, looking at each other.
Broadcasting from the capital of the free world, this is Zardcast.
Welcome to Zardcast. I'm your host, C.T. Schwenk. Thank you for joining us. It is May 21st, 2015, here in Washington, D.C. I sound upbeat, but actually, the Wizards are done for the year. Could not come to bear to watch the Eastern Conference Finals last night. Day's confused here. But we're back. We're kind of out of a hibernation here. Me and my good friend, Duncan Perfect Roth. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you giving me a little time to, you know, stitch the pieces of my heart back together before you made me get behind a microphone again. But it's good to be back.
Yeah, it was pretty. We were trying to do it over the weekend, and the wound was just too fresh. So we've pushed things back, and hopefully we'll have something good for you to listen to when you're heading to the beach, wherever you may be going for Memorial Day weekend, maybe laying by the pool, etc. We've got a good show for you tonight. We've got two guests on the line. We'll get to them in just a moment. But first, just a couple things here to the top of the show. Do follow us on Twitter at Zardcast. Zardcast.com is where you can find all of our old episodes. You can subscribe on iTunes from there. That's the best way to get the show, especially throughout the summer. Our schedule is going to be a little bit erratic until the 2015-16 rolls around again, season rolls around again. So that's the best way to get to us. Leave a review on iTunes if you like what you hear. As well, a big shout-out to the Baltimore Sports Report for posting our stuff. And like I said, we had a little bit of a hard time coming to terms with the end of the season, so we're back here. We're going to, you know, run through that Game 6. We're going to talk about the developing storylines coming over the past week. And on Monday, our plan is to do a Power Hour podcast where me, Duncan, David Keffer, Max Binstock, the other guys who've been with me throughout the season, we're going to Power Hour and talk about the Wizards. And that'll be it until about draft time. So we'll be back with you on Tuesday, and then we'll be going once a month throughout the summer. So we'll do some draft stuff, July, who knows what we'll talk about. But there's always things to talk about, always things to banter about, as things can tend to happen down here. But anyway, let's get to the meat of this program. I've got two guys on the line. First up, let's go with Jake Whitaker from Bullets Forever. He is a friend of the pod. It's his third appearance on here. Jake, how are you? Glad to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think I'm finally in the fifth stage of denial or grief, so I'm at the acceptance phase, and I think we're good to go.
Excellent. You're a lot further along than I don't think you've ever been on the podcast with Dave before, Jake, but he's still a wreck. Duncan, he said he's back to normal. I'm almost there, so it sounds like at least three of us are on the same page. Adam McGinnis from Truth About It, how are you? Where are you on all these stages of grief?
It's funny, you stole my line, Jake. I am not in acceptance yet. I think I'm more in denial a little bit. I think just an overall sense of that really just happened. I can't. So even though it's been almost a week now, it's still kind of a fog of days. I think the finality of the season ending has been, you know, where like you just been for how long since preseason started, you're ready for the next game, you know, any painful loss, you're ready for another contest that you can focus on. And since there isn't one, I think that's been the tough one to really overcome.
I probably spent the longest time in the murderous stage, I would say.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but I advanced through it.
I'm glad to hear that. Especially, I'm glad you got through that before you came over to my apartment tonight. That's good.
You just would have been
out of
cover for it, that's all.
Yeah.
Oh, sports are great, aren't they?
I want to start out with this, gentlemen. I want to ask, where were you when you were watching Game 6? What did you do immediately afterwards? Was there... Did, Some opted to just hit the hay. I know I did some drinking, and I shoved my face full of pizza. That was my way of handling it. How were things on Friday night, wherever you were? Whoever wants to
Well,
up,
I guess for me, I had to write the recap for Bullets Forever that night. And
ouch.
After it happened, I just kind of just sat there and looked at the computer for about 10 minutes, and I'm just... What just happened? Is the season really over? Did we just go from, you know, Wall's gonna, you know, stir this amazing comeback to get the Wizards to the Eastern Conference Finals, and then everything gets waved off and you realize, you know, that's not just a game, that's it. And it was rough for a while just to kind of piece together everything that led to that point.
Adam, where were you at? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was actually covering the game as a member of the media.
Oh, man.
It was a tough one. I was up in the... Since they had so much coverage during the game, they move people a certain way. So I was actually up in the hockey press box, which is at the top of the arena. And I was recording the last shot with my camera. And so I actually sat there and recorded it. And we're like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm scanning the crowd, people going crazy, nuts. You're looking at the cameras, like, did that count or not? And the crowd, I kind of described it. I don't know if we put it up yet because it took me a few days to write it. But the crowd just went from the pandemonium craziness to the roof getting blown out to this, like, nervous energy when they, you know, check the TV. And then the ref comes out. And they kind of said, no basket. And then everyone just kind of went into a zombie state. And that people wouldn't leave their seats. They kind of just stood there. And in fact, not sure anymore. And I just kind of was frozen. And I loaded up my video so I could put it online because it was crazy. And I just sat there. And I didn't even go anywhere. And just stood there while the ushers cooked their seats because nobody really wanted to leave. It was a very surreal, bizarre experience.
Man, I feel fortunate that I was able to just dive into pizza and then to bed after that.
Yeah, I actually, you know, so then I went to the interviews and all that, and afterwards I met a buddy that needed a drink right away, Clyde's, obviously, and my friend is from Atlanta, so he was there cheering for the Hawks. And so, yeah, I was kind of really depressed, and I met some friends later, and they're like, what's wrong with you? You weren't talking much. I'm like, yeah, sports. And then finally they showed the replay at one of the bars I was at. And my friend was like, oh my God, like that happened. I was like, I told you, because you weren't listening.
There's a reason for all of this. Duncan, you were in had the best environment to watch, take this all in for.
I definitely had the best, probably one, maybe the best case scenario to watch it. I was on vacation with my girlfriend, some of her family and family friends. And we were down the beach watching the game. And going into it, there was only one other Wizards fan there, but everyone else in the house just kind of got swept up in it and became Wizards fans throughout the game. And when that shot went in, everyone went crazy. Watching it on TV, they showed a replay right away, and I could tell it wasn't going to count. But a bunch of the people like weren't really basketball fans, so they're like, but it was just like it was just on his fingers. He'd let go. That counts. And I'm like, no. He's touching it. It doesn't count. And they're like, no, it's going to count. And I had to keep telling him, like, look, it doesn't count. Don't try to cheer me up. I know this doesn't count. Let's go play a game and keep drinking. That's what we did.
It's a good plan. That was a really...
Well, it's pretty true. Did you think he went out of bounds, too? Like, I couldn't tell on the replay. I was more focused on him maybe stepping out of bounds. I couldn't really tell. I know. I think they said later, I think Whitman said later in his press conference that they can't overrule that call.
I don't think he was out of bounds. I think it was just a hand thing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. That I guess.
Okay.
I guess they were really, really only showing those replays like knee up on him. So I'm not sure about that. That was a strange game though, because early on, I mean, it just seemed like they were just dead and buried. We hadn't really seen anything like that throughout the playoffs. There was that one, was it game two, where there was like about 8 minutes left and the game was pretty much over. But to that point, I don't feel like we'd seen that like lack of energy, that lack of concern from the Wizards. And like Jake said, it was supposed to be, you know, John Wall's back. He's going to take us to the promised land. And they, you know, were effectively dead, and you know they were able to storm back. But it was a very strange game to watch. And you know, we were half a second away from going to overtime, but it was very so Wizards, and it felt like they were just going to thud out of the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say game four, without Wall, they gave up like 67 points in the first half. Like, it came down to like a Pierce three again to tie it, and he missed. I think that's the only other stretch where the Wizards really kind of struggled for a while during game throughout the series.
Yeah, I think that just kind of having game five end the way it did, where they thought they had them, and then just had Al Horford kind of steal it at the buzzer. Yeah. I think it took, you know, that whole first half to really get them to realize, hey, there's still a series here. You can still, you know, if you win tonight, you can go back in game seven and, you know, make up for that last play. But yeah, you know, it's, you know, as much as we analyze, you know, like the last 2 minutes, it's a 48 minute game. And, you know, that the first half really cost the Wizard.
Yeah. I thought they came out flat and their offense was totally out of sync. Both teams actually didn't really play that well offensively. And then in the second half, it felt like the Wizards, throughout the third period, early fourth, they just couldn't get a stop. And I know it's hard because you haven't really, you know, like, overanalyzed the game that much, but if you look back on it, I mean, they just couldn't get a stop when they needed them. And that kind of, the reason they kind of came back in the fourth quarter is they started making some defensive stops. And that's kind of what fueled the fourth quarter comeback. They came up short. It was really bizarre because you were talking about, as the game's over, right, you're going down there, and I want to ask about the two defensive breakdowns I thought were the keys to the game at the end. It was just really hard because Whitman's completely sad and dejected, and you kind of, you don't know how to ask him that question, too, because I know I'm getting ready for him to not answer it. But to me, the two Carroll plays when they were tied, backdoor, that those two I thought were more important than obviously the pure shot at the buzzer kind of overshadows those breakdowns. To me, were kind of the game in the crucial moments, more so than Pierce's, you know, desperation crazy three that got called off.
I don't know what his, how many he hit versus he didn't. I mean, he didn't make it before the buzzer, but like the fact that he just was drilling threes like that in totally clutch situations was mind-boggling.
That shot was incredible. The one that he missed, what was it, game four?
Four, yeah.
The real deep one. There was no doubt in my mind that that was going in when he let it go, just based off how he's been playing in the postseason. I thought that one, as soon as he got that look, I was like, oh, man, nice, and then it didn't go in.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy to think that these last four games came down to shots in the last 10 seconds. 15 seconds, and then three of them go against the Wizard in a row.
Did you guys?
I think that's been the devastation part. You know, we're talking about grieving. To me, it wasn't just that one game, the finality of it, which is true. It's just this overall sense that we just think through this emotional toll of these four games, and with John Wall's injury, and looks like we were possibly the better team to get the Eastern Conference Finals. I think all of that has been what kind of fueled the depression more so than just losing a game the way they lost a game in game six. I mean, it's always more painful than, I was thinking back to the Damon Jones guy, Damon F. Jones against the Cavs, and I kind of think the other night would have been more painful. Gerald missed the free throws, and I don't know, I think the other night possibly was more painful because it kind of had the same feeling where the Wizards maybe were the better team in the series and they came up short. But in this case, this was to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, where that was the first round. I don't know if that team had really a shot with the way they played defense to advance, where a lot of us maybe think that the Wizards maybe still had a shot in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, or at least a chance to compete.
Did any of you watch the Eastern Conference Finals last night? I watched the first quarter, but Adam, you're spot on. I mean, the fact of the matter is these teams were like completely evenly matched, and you know, you feel like you get over this hump that it's, you know, the road could be open to the finals possibly. And you know, I watched the highlights, but I watched that first quarter, just how kind of it seemed even footing, the even ground that Atlanta and Cleveland are both on. It just seems like an opportunity wasted. You're right, that's the most depressing part, the fact that they are not in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Almost bizarrely, is the way that the Cavs are I did not watch it. I saw the highlights. I was out at a buddy's birthday party. Luckily, there was not a TV, so I was not enticed to maybe go look at it. But I think what's also bizarre is with Kevin Love out, Kyrie hurting, you know, I mean, that the Cavs are winning with J.R. Smith and Mozgov and Tristan Thompson. You know, does that really scare you? I mean, I don't know LeBron's LeBron, but it's kind of, and a weird thing is that the Cavs probably are a better matchup right now for the Wizards, who played big,
than
the Hawks, or maybe even the Raptors when they played well.
I didn't watch it, but only because I was I was doing other stuff. I'd intend to watch every game from here on out, as I have been trying to do thus far. I'm kind of a junkie for the stuff, but every team in the playoffs on the East, I would say the Wizards could take, you know, with their full health and a good run. I think they could have taken anybody, including the Cavs.
Same here. I missed game one. I'm going to probably try to catch some of the series later on, but I've seen enough of LeBron, you know, carrying a team probably farther than they should go, and, you know, being annoying when he does it. So it's just kind of, you know, I've seen that film.
The Kyrie's involvement is what's most saddening to me. It's hard. I don't want to root for the Hawks, because obviously they just knocked the Wizards out. And I got to admit, I kind of got a small thing for LeBron. I like to watch him play. And normally I would definitely root against him for, you know, his complete destruction of the Hawks. But the fact that LeBron's success automatically is tied to Kyrie Irving's, I don't know. It's not really appealing to me right now.
You could just be rooting for J.R. Smith exclusively.
That's true.
Well, I hate Dan Gilbert with everything there is. And if you ever follow me on Twitter, I'd love to talk about what a big loan shark that he is. And that's how I got all his money. So I don't want any happiness for him. So any Cavs happiness usually is him. But as a basketball standpoint, I think I kind of want to see LeBron versus Steph Curry.
Yeah.
But I don't really care. I don't really care. It goes the other way. And now with Carroll spraining his knee to the Hawks, who's the best defender, with Sabo being beat up by the New York cops, it's going to be, I think, going to be tough for Atlanta on the defensive end.
You know, for a second, I was kind of thinking, it was like, well, it would be nice if, you know, Brendan Haywood got a ring. But then I remembered he already got one with Dallas. So, you know, don't worry for you, Brendan Haywood. You're good. So, yeah.
One thing I did like in Game 6, took some joy out of, was just the continued destruction of Kyle Korver by the Wizards.
Yes.
And another game where he just couldn't do anything and just was bungling things down in crunch time.
Oh, yeah. He had a couple of – what's funny is that, you know, Beal was all over him and made it really hard for him. And Atlanta, every time you ask him a question, the coach would say, oh, you know, just Korver's presence is helping the other offense. And, yeah, maybe to a certain extent that's somewhat true, but Korver was just off. There was two shots at the end of that game I thought for sure were going to go in. And I was like, okay, here's Kyle Korver, the backbreaker. One, he was kind of wide open, and he missed it both. He just kind of looked bad. So it felt like Beal was in his head a while. And to have Beal defend him that well, and then also, you know, put in 29 points and be, you know, Wizards leading scorer all series, was pretty impressive.
I think with how well Beal guarded him, it put extra pressure on Korver when he was open to feel like, oh, now I really have to make this shot because it's, you know, the first good look I've gotten in 15 minutes. And even when he had those wide open looks, like his percentages were just awful the whole series. And I think it's just incredible to see a guy that young play such a, you know, incredible role on the defensive end while still doing so much on the offensive end, carrying the load for Wall when he was out, and, you know, still playing really efficiently when Wall came back.
Yeah, especially the way Atlanta runs Korver off so many screens too. I mean, Beal was fighting through so many getting beat up on those picks, and then, you know, still producing so much on the offensive end.
Beal also had some, you know, another post-game comment in the line of Paul Pierce's incredibly great post-game lines where they asked him who he was rooting for the rest of the way, and he just said, I don't care. I hope no one wins or something like that.
Yeah, he said that.
sore winner.
Pretty funny. He was pretty dejected after the game too. I missed his post game press conference at the podium, but from what I heard, he was pretty down.
Also claiming that the Wiz would have won 4-1 with John there the entire time. I don't know about that, but I like where his head's at least.
Yeah, it's a tough one too because, I mean, through the first five games, Wizards had, I wrote about this, the first five games, Wizards had the best offense in the playoffs, had the second-ranked defense. They swept the Raptors, won game one in Atlanta, and then you miss him for three games, take him out for three games, and he comes back and plays, you know, I thought pretty well considering five fractures in the wrist. Somehow it's been overlooked because the outcome didn't come to the Wizards, where if the Wizards would have won, we'd be talking about how, you know, Willis Reed and all these storylines would have been happening about John Wall's wrist, but still, it's pretty phenomenal that Wall played at such an elite level with a messed up wrist the way he did.
Yeah, I heard Randy Whitman talking on the Junkies, and he was kind of pointing out where John's injury affected him, and it wasn't, I mean, he couldn't quite play. He wasn't like sticking his hand out for steals and trying to grab rebounds with his left hand, but I mean, all things considered, played damn well, and it sounded like it was just kind of a pain thing, like he couldn't break it any more than it was already broken, I guess, is what they're saying at least. And so shout out to him. That was fabulous right there.
And he had the what at the time you thought was the game winning block,
right,
with that left hand,
mm-hmm,
in game five.
Oh God, that play! I think that play is probably going to go down in, unfortunately, lore. I mean, if the ball just goes off into his head, you know, if he punches it out of bounds or fumbles it or something, I think it goes the Wizards' way. But that was traumatic. I mean, especially, you know, happening in the Caps moves 15 minutes later, just devastating.
I gave some serious thought to calling out of work the next morning. It was bad time.
Yeah, I actually went on a walk after that my route, but my buddy was watching the Cavs game. I was like, I can't really just watch the Blues right now. And I went for a walk, and I came back, and I got a text message on the way, and basically kind of implied that the Cavs had lost. I'm like, great, you know, one of those finalities. But I think it was a little different. The Wizards, they were bummed, but there still was two more games.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't like a complete, it was like, hey, you know, all things considered, they sort of won that game, they'll come back home, it's going to be tough to win game seven, but there still was like a faint sliver of hope, and I honestly thought the Wizards were going to play a lot better than they did in game six. I think if you want to go back to that game, it's unfortunate, you know, Orchard Gore tie coming down, I guess, with an illness, no one really knew at the time. He was pretty much played 12 games, pretty much ineffective, and to have your center who's been arguably the second best player, maybe, definitely the best big throughout the playoffs, and not to have him in the most crucial game of the season, especially at 100%, was a killer. And I think that was kind of the difference. And another thing about, and I hate to hate on Paul Pierce, I think what was struggling about it, if you actually look in the series, and I was thinking about, you know, why did the Wizards lose the series, right? And I asked these questions to you guys. To me, it was obviously the Wall injury will be one that come to mind, but they had really no answer for Paul Millsap all series. And that small lineup that had been so well against Raptors didn't really, it was better than the big lineup, but just Paul Pierce did not defend Paul Millsap. Nene tried. They really couldn't try, you know, but that was really, to me, the X factor, is that they didn't really have any answer for Millsap, and Holford kind of outplayed Gortat as well. I don't know. What do you guys think of why, overall, why they lost that?
I think you're right on there. I mean, I would probably say Al Horford with that layup, certainly that changed the series. But I mean, he just dominated the entire time. I think he's averaging something like 19-10 throughout the playoffs. He's a beast. He's you know, the next big. Next big thing down there in Hot Atlanta. I also kind of think Randy Whitman's just straight up refusal to not separate Nene and Gortat. I think that really killed him. I mean, how many stretches did we see those two out there and just getting pummeled by Millsap and Horford? And then they shake things up, and obviously Paul Pierce's defense wasn't great throughout the series, but they did much better when they went to the smaller lineup, and a lot of times they should have gone to it sooner and probably should have shooken things up a little bit more with Kevin Serafin and Chris Humphreys getting out there and maybe playing the five and whatnot.
Yeah, I still don't understand the Humphreys thing. I know some people, I mean, I don't understand why he didn't play at all. I get maybe, you know, things were working well in Toronto, so Whitman sometimes just sticks with things that work. And it was working well, so it's hard to argue against that. But at some point in the second series, you think you just throw Humphreys in there to see how he did, especially if he was such an important member of the rotation throughout the season. And I found that he at least deserved some type of run in the postseason compared to Gooden and Serafin. I mean, I understand that they wanted Gooden out there for spacing purposes because Gooden was shooting some threes, but Gooden was really bad in game five. Serafin's always been, a wild card. Although if that was the last game that we saw with Kevin Serafin in Wizards uniform, he sure as hell went out with the bang. He had a hell of a game. He probably kept him. We were talking about how bad they were in the first half. He was like really the only one that kind of kept him in that game offensively, which is kind of crazy.
Probably made himself a couple bucks.
Another positive having Hump in there is he brings a lot of attention from the non-basketball sect whenever he's on the court, mm-hmm. due to his reality fame. And the Wizards, I think they need a little more pub sometimes, even in the city. Like, I remember during the tournament, the March Madness tournament, Wizards playing big, big games that would be on, like, one TV out of 25, you know? So maybe you throw Hump a few minutes just to get the ratings up a bit.
Well, my sister, who knows nothing about sports and doesn't really care at all, texted me, I would say maybe December, to let me know that she knows a Wizard now. And that it was Chris Humphreys because she saw in some tabloid magazine that he played for the Wizards now. And she was really, really excited to tell that.
Some sisterly love there. Funny.
Yeah, I can't remember a Wizard in at least recent memory that you just say their name and just brings up such irrational hate. you could say, Chris Humphreys is having a really great game tonight, and like five people will hop on and say, Chris Humphreys is terrible, and it's just okay. You just kind of realize if people are spewing on Chris Humphreys, they're probably not watching for the basketball part of it. So you just kind of move on.
Yeah, I was at the end of the season interview media availability on Monday, and they asked Humphreys. So Humphreys was one of the last people to go, and I asked him that certain question. I just said, hey, what does the staff say to you about, your role this season? Did they let you know stuff? And he's like, it's kind of a weird answer. He's pretty candid. He was like, they haven't really said anything. I'm about to go meet with the coach right now. So that was kind of a weird answer that they've not really kind of said to him, like, hey, we're going to go with Gooden for this reason or Serafin for this first reason. And maybe they just had a lot going on, so they didn't really care about that at that point. But I thought that was a really kind of a peculiar answer from him. And yeah, I don't know if it would have made a difference. It just seemed like it was an option that you would go to, especially how many times you have to see Nene struggling guarding him before you're like, let's try something else.
Well, I think the Chris Humphreys and wondering where he's at is a good spot to kind of transition into some off-season talk. But first, Duncan, you wanted to say goodbye to the Wizards season.
The only way I know how.
Well, that's one way to do it. Well, you originally said you texted me and you're like, can you pull up Goodbye to You? And that is the song you were looking for. This is what came to mind for me.
See, this is more, that was more like my thoughts towards the Raptors. That's like a joyful
yes, that's a good
goodbye
point.
To you.
And then just one last one. What are we going to do this offseason? I don't know. But it's true, guys. Monday was a weird night for me. I went and saw Mad Max Fury Road, actually, in the absence of...
Oh, yeah.
Thoughts?
Oh, it was excellent. I didn't get the game-changing, like, action talk. People are comparing it to, like, The Matrix and, like, Terminator 2 and, like, Aliens and things like that. It was definitely really wild and excellent. I mean, it was 2 hours of action, essentially, but...
Was it the dustiest movie you've ever seen?
I think I saw that movie Red Planet back in the day, and I think there's a lot of dust on Mars, so I'll give that one the dust bowl nod.
I watched like last summer blockbuster today. I watched Edge of Tomorrow earlier, actually, like right before I came over here.
Oh, good movie.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
So is it a continuation of the old Mad Max? Is that the plot?
I believe I've never seen the old Mad Maxes. I've heard the first one is worth watching, but the other two are not. But I guess it takes place in the same place, like the dystopian future, and it features one of the bad guys. The main bad guy is a bad guy in one of the other movies.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it like years and years ago, so I was curious.
But yeah, the new one, definitely worth your time. Jake, that's one you should take the kids to, for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Bree's been begging me to see that lately, so...
I knew it.
You know, we'll put the stilts on her, and it'll be great.
I say that Jake just watches Seinfeld reruns all the time. I didn't know he actually... he actually went to movies, but that's a cool development. I applaud it.
You said you were going to put the
reruns, too? I know you're a fan of both those shows, or you find a way to work them into any Wizards coverage, which I really appreciate as a Seinfeld myself.
Just the two sides of my brain now. Basically, it's just Wizards and Simpsons. And so... anytime there's any cross section, you just gotta run with it.
Absolutely. Adam, you said you were at the media availability on Monday. Were you around when Gortat was talking about his personal issues and his stretch four comments? I think that's probably the most interesting thing that's come out of the early postseason.
Someone mentioned, I guess he'd said some stuff before about this, like in some radio interviews that I was unaware of, that he kind of dropped hints to some personal issues. I thought it was the thing that kind of piqued up my interest as I was there recording it was when he mentioned a case. He said something about a case, and so of course, you know, immediately your radar goes up to like case, like legal case, mm-hmm. like something, you know. And I didn't know if that's translations, you know, Polish English translation, where he's just saying case as a thing, you know, something that happened to him, not an actual legal case. I think Jay Michael tweeted later something that is not a legal case. He didn't really ever kept asking him questions about it later. He didn't really prefer, just kind of, he said, hey, it's personal. That's why it's personal. Definitely, I mean, we all know that if you look at Gortat's season, he definitely was in a funk, I think January, February. Definitely, he did snap out of it at the end of the season. I think played pretty well. Yeah, he was very curious, and then someone asked him about Nene, and he kind of was honest. And Gortat is usually pretty brutally honest about things, and maybe a little bit too much at times. And he kind of inferred that maybe, you know, Nene's my bro and stuff, but maybe I shouldn't play with him as much. I mean, that's kind of what he inferred. Someone asked Nene that question, and Nene and his didn't really want to answer any questions to that. Kind of just said, hey, that's up to the coach. I'm willing to do whatever. But he also, the problem has always been Nene has never really wanted to play the five.
Right.
And he was, 'cause he's always been complaining about it. He doesn't want to guard the big. He thinks he gets banged up. And so he kind of still said that a little bit to say, hey, you know, I'm willing to, someone asked him, are you willing to come off the bench? He said, sure, whatever the coaches want. But then he also then came back to say, you know, I don't like playing the five, essentially. So I don't know what that really means. But yeah, it was interesting to see how Gortat kind of admitted that him and Nene hasn't been working. And if you actually look at the on-off numbers of the postseason, I think that they were overall negative when they played together. And if you look at, see a lot of times where the Wizards started slow, or they started slow in the second half, that was the pairing that was on the court. And it's obvious that, you know, this isn't working. Why I've taken the staff, I mean, it kind of wasn't working at the end of last season, postseason, why I took the staff a whole year to really figure it out, I think is why a lot of people get upset with Randy Whitman for various reasons, but I think that's one of them.
Jake, do you think, I mean, there's been some speculation that this might be, Nene might retire after this next year. Do you think that he could switch to the bench? He might play center? He might adapt and be like, hey, if this is going to be my last year or whatnot, maybe he's willing to do something new? Or do you think he's going to be pissy, a-hole Nene and, you know, just be stubborn, not want to play the five, and maybe even get traded? How are you feeling about this whole Nene Gortat situation?
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, a few years back, I remember reading somewhere that Nene said his plan was always to be retired before the Olympics come to Rio, which would be next year. So you could, because the thing is, you could always sell Nene. Hey, if you just work at being a center, it could really increase your value going into free agency next season. But if he's just going to retire, then he's probably just going to keep doing what he's doing. There's no point in changing if this is going to be your last year. So it's tricky, but I think when you point out, you know, just how the league's gotten a lot smaller just in the past few years, it's a lot easier for Nene to get away at center and still have a size advantage against most guys. I mean, you know, I was trying to kind of rack my brain of like who could really punish Block right now. And it's, you know, it's like Cousins, Drummond, you know, Valanciunas if he's having a really good game, maybe. But I mean, there's not a lot of big hulking centers out there anymore. And, you know, I think if they want to switch him to center, I think that's the most practical move. But if not, I still think, you know, Nene's got a decent mid-range shot. If he really just wanted to work on it, he could become a somewhat viable stretch four if he really wanted to be.
That's true. We saw him, I mean, at least last year, devastate some teams with his long-range jumper. We saw it in, you know, at times in the regular season, so that's definitely on the table. Duncan, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was going to say about him there to add is that I think, let's say that his concerns about playing the five are, like, unwarranted. I think he has a point in the sense that he gets hurt a lot. And so I think he thinks in his mind, you know, it's always been the main criticism of Nene, right, especially as a Wizard, is his health. And it's kind of miraculous that he went the whole season without any injuries. We always make a lot of jokes about Nene and his health, but the training staff deserves some credit in keeping him pretty much healthy throughout. So I do think that there is some point to him thinking that if he plays a lot of five, that he's going to get banged around and potentially injured. I think there's, you know, a little bit validity to that, but you're making $13 million a year. You have one season left. So I think catering to Nene's ego on the list of things that the Wizards got to worry about, I think has moved way down.
Duncan, do you have any thoughts on what Gortat his issues might have been, his personal issues? Any speculations?
I think Gortat's just a real tough guy. Nene's kind of a little bit of a softy.
and then
they clash, yeah.
I think it was a girl. I thought maybe it was a relationship girl situation.
Ooh.
That's a good call.
But don't quote me. I don't know.
Quoted.
Sure. Don't
you are quoted.
I think that it had something to do with some type of relationship. I think there were some of the quotes you had about being single, looking at walls, and kind of some weird Gortat stuff.
Maybe her name was Casey.
Yeah, it kind of gave me some hints that maybe there was something going on in his personal life with relationships.
I was thinking kind of maybe his boys or his family back in Poland, you know, leaning on him for money. You know, everyone wants something, a lot of open mouths. And maybe he was kind of fed up with it after the big contract. Just all conjecture.
I think that could be as well. I know he's always inferred about how jealous people in Poland get of him, and he gets tugged a lot of ways. And so he always kind of has like a disdain towards this, because he always makes comments like, you know, I worked hard for all I got. People just want to tear you down in Poland. He said a lot of quotes to that. Sometimes they don't really make any sense, but maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe some family members, you know, I'm just guessing, projecting. So, you know, maybe it has something to do with money and family members, possibly as well.
If only Dave was here, he'd probably have the inside scoop from John.
That's true. Yeah, Dave fancies himself a friend from John Wall. We've never seen them together, but that's what he claims. I don't know.
Really?
That's what he says. That's what he says. I think it's an exaggeration, but
Jake, they hang on the club. They hang on the club together.
he wishes. He wishes. Definitely not. what were you saying, Jake?
I think it's the pig. I think he probably realized that the pig he met at that grocery store over the summer. He probably realized that the pig's no longer among us, and you know, it just kind of hit him at some point. And you know, it can be rough. You know, when you hear about the passing away of a pig you met in Poland over the summer. You never know.
It's funny. Someone asked about the pig, actually, as his interview ended. They asked if he's going to... He said, hey, just, he gave out his Twitter handle and said to follow me to see what happens this summer. Something new and exciting is going to happen.
Yeah, it was summer of Gortat last year. I can't wait to see what he's got up his sleeve this year.
Yeah, wasn't he in tanks too? Did he roll around with like the army in the tank?
Yeah.
I would say it's tough for him to have anything up his sleeves because I don't know that I've ever seen him with sleeves on.
Also, good point.
This is true. This is very true.
Jake, you brought the pod to a morbid stop with the whole pig talk, but I guess I want to keep it there because I want us to kind of eulogize and reflect on the Kevin Seraphine era in Washington, D.C. He said after the game he will no longer be with the Wizards. He's looking for a starting spot somewhere. Someone is going to overpay him, but I'm going to miss him a little bit. His antics, and I think this year was definitely his best year. I probably wouldn't want the Wizards to throw a bunch of money at him, but good guy to come off the bench maybe in the future for some other team. I think starting might be a stretch.
Yeah, I think he's might be getting fed some bad info from his agent there about his market. But yeah, I can't see him coming back to Washington. It's just... You know, it's like at a job, you just know at a certain point you just can't advance anymore at the company you're at, and you need to kind of get somewhere new. And I mean, in fairness, Kevin Seraphine does have two things that you want any big man to have: ability to, you know, block shots and have at least one decent offensive option. I mean, that's a lot more than, you know, a lot of 7-footers can say. So I think. He'll have an interesting market. I don't think he'll get starters minutes, but maybe somewhere that, you know, doesn't have a set in stone center for the long term might give him a look and kind of platoon him with some other guys. So, I mean, it'll be interesting, but I think it, with where the Wizards are, if they get Nene to play center at least somewhat and maybe get someone on the veterans minimum just to kind of be a body, or just try to throw DeJuan Blair out there a little bit, maybe. I think they'll manage.
Yeah, Cat's life. I mean, what a ride, right?
He will be best. Him and Sneaky.
He goes from not even barely speaking English to buying Javel's Segway, to riding around town, to embracing the nation's capital, to it's basically his own hashtag, Cat's life. And now I know Jake is a fan, and I don't know if you guys are as well, as the inspirational quotes that he produces on a daily basis. I interviewed him, actually. The reason I missed Wall and Beal's press conference, I was in the locker room, and I interviewed Kevin just kind of one-on-one after he talked to the French guy forever. And, you know, he's funny. He's, you know, introspective. He told me that he was thinking about how this maybe was his last game in D.C., and I kind of asked him some, you know, questions here and there, and he just kind of was... He didn't really give a sense either way. I think he kind of wanted to come back, but he also says stuff about business. His agent is also with LeBron, same agent that LeBron has. So maybe he goes to the Cavs. I don't know.
That'd be interesting.
It'll be interesting. I think that his game definitely is seducing to people, because you see a big guy, like Jake was saying, you see a big guy with such a nice touch that it's kind of hard. You don't really see that many big guys in the league who can really finish with both hands and have a nice jumper. And, you know, if you watch, and then of course, as we all know, if you watch him more, you know, his rebound suffers and misses defensive rotations to the ire of Randy Whitman. And he has improved on the defensive end somewhat. I don't know if he's really your guy on a 30 to 35 minute team if you want to win basketball games to have him be the guy that's got to protect the rim. I'm very unsure of that, but I think there's definitely a role in this league that maybe a couple of years I didn't see that for him. Now, the money part, gosh, who knows? I mean, we're going to see this offseason, the money that's going to get thrown around at certain people is going to probably make us go crazy. So who knows? Maybe Kevin gets a part of that wild, wild money that we'll be throwing around the streets and see.
I'm hoping we get some of that. How do we get our hands on the some of that TV money? Schwenk?
You know, it's been tough. I've sent some letters out. I've been on a couple phone calls. Normally, you know, we need to start pulling bigger sponsors in, Duncan.
That's well, we got the new one, Probably a good time to plug them.
Yeah, go for it.
Q-tips. How are you going to listen to Zardcast with all that wax in your ears, you dunce?
And as I recall, when we first met, you were afraid of Q-tips.
Still am.
That's a true story.
I'm not going to turn down a sponsorship, though.
All right. Fair enough.
No, I'm a fan of the rapper Q-tip. So.
We're trying to get him on the show, too. He also has a Q-tip sponsorship, shockingly enough. He's on their roster. I quickly want to touch, I got just a couple more things here. Quickly touch on Paul Pierce. You know, things were a success with him out on this team this year. They altered his role, come playoff time, that, you know, paid huge dividends. He was gigantic from a clutch standpoint, and, you know, half a second away from sending game six into overtime. But after the game, he's talking about retiring possibly. I don't know if I can actually see him doing that, but, you know, on the flip side of things, and, you know, as great as he was, and as much as I'd say we probably all want him back, he did look 37 in that game six. You know, you got to save the tread on his tires till the postseason. Did you guys see him coming back? Is he retiring? How do you guys feel about Paul Pierce at this point, other than, you know, he was fabulous to have on your team, and what a revelation for, I'd say, a guy that I definitely did not like watching him play in the NBA.
I think a lot of what Pierce had to say there at the end of the game, I think a lot of that's just emotion, and, you know, that'll pass. But it's when that thought starts crossing your mind, you know the finish line's right around the corner. And what will be the issue is, until training camp, to decide whether to pick up his player option. He has to kind of make that decision by the end of June, I believe. So, you know, he can't, you know, kind of have a summer kumbaya session to figure out what he wants to do. But he really kind of hogties the Wizards' plans until they know what he's going to do. Because if not, he comes off the cap, but the Wizards still don't have a lot of money to replace him and address all the other needs they have. And, you know, Pierce just fills such a unique role on the team. It's hard to find, you know, a guy who can be, you know, an NBA starter caliber player at small forward and still pick up those spot minutes at power forward when you need him to. And so, If he does come back, he kind of gives the Wizards some flexibility, but also constraint at the same time, because if he decides to come back but not take his player option and just hit free agency, he could kind of, you know, force the Wizards to maybe even pay a little bit more than they were going to, just because they know they need someone like him. And because of, you know, the bird rights and all the funky cap stuff, they really can't go out on the market and find someone for the same price.
Paul was, you know, obviously sensational throughout the playoffs. And obviously the game six cut, I was mentioning earlier about his defense, I thought. But he also had a really poor offensive game. It's kind of like the shot goes in. We kind of, because of the whole finality of it, the change of emotions from, oh my God, he just made that to tie it, to now the series is over, the game is over, season's over. So those, you forget that he was actually really bad in that game, and you mentioned it earlier. But overall, obviously, I think it was a plus signing. You know, it's one of those things where they say, you know, oh, he's going to bring, it's these abstract things they say, which sometimes I don't necessarily agree with. He's going to make the younger players better, the veteran leadership, and sometimes that's hard to prove. And it's hard to argue that it didn't happen. I mean, you look at Otto Porter, who we haven't mentioned, which maybe we can talk about a little bit. You know, Otto's out there strutting around, finishing his confidence. Bradley Beal's talking shit to Kyle Lowry, doing stuff aggressive. Those two players never really had that personality until this season. And you saw that it helped them. And it's hard to say that Paul Pierce didn't have an impact and an effect on them. I think even John's always had that alpha male kind of personality, similar to Pierce, but I mean, I think that Wall really embraced his leadership role more with the blessing of Pierce. So I think that those were all positives for the team that he made. Obviously, what Jake was mentioning of him playing before in the playoffs, whether or not he could have played that throughout the whole season, with his age, I don't really know. I do agree that after the game, I was actually in that scrum where his eyes started watering up. I thought he was almost going to cry, honestly. And he came really close to crying when he was talking about his family and what this emotional toll takes on all of them physically and mentally. I think what he was kind of emotional about, too, is, you know, how many more of these games he doesn't have left. And then also, you know, when you finish these seasons, you think about, like, all the workouts they got to do in the summer. You know, so I think the games and all that stuff, he can play, but you know, going through the process that you have to do in the offseason to get ready for the season, I think that was what was – he was weighing really heavily whether or not I want to do that, along with putting my family through it all. I don't see him walking away from $5 million. I know people think that, you know, people have all this money, and it's true. He probably got $100 million. I don't know how much he's made in his career, probably enough. But still, I don't know where he's going to make $5 million again to play a game he loves. So I would see that he's going to – I think that he will – I just don't see him walking away, and that be the last memory of Paul Pierce.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I was kind of thinking about it, and it's like, could he have a better playoffs next season than he did this season?
Be tough.
Like a better ending? Yeah, I guess, right? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know – I agree that I think $5 million is a lot to say no to, but Paul Pierce is one of those crazy dudes, though, that sometimes, you know, he just does the thing that that doesn't make sense, but he can do it because he's Paul Pierce. And I mean, you know, the World Series of Poker is coming. You know, if he hits the payday, you know, I mean, all bets are off.
Yeah, that's true. If there's anyone going to walk away from $5 million, you can see Paul Pierce doing it, right?
Guys, let's we've had minimal talk about everyone's favorite wizard. Let's talk a little John Wall. Let's start it off.
Ni ha washi John Wall.
John Wall.
John Wall.
John Wall.
John was just a boy.
John Wall.
John Wall.
John Wall, the Washington Wizards.
A spectacular circus shot by John Wall.
Everybody do it, John.
Obviously, we've sung his praises. He came back from 5 fractures in his left hand and wrist to play phenomenally in the last 2 games of the series. But this week, we get news that he is second-team All-NBA defense, which hopefully puts his critics to rest who insist that, you know, oh, man, he struggles against smaller point guards, and he's not really that good. Like, I think it was a joke that he wasn't on, you know, first, second All-Defense team last year, and so he makes it this year, but...
Snubbed.
Yeah. Let's talk snubbery here. Does not make any tier of the All-NBA team. I didn't really like Kyrie on there, but I can see why. My real issue was Klay Thompson over John Wall. And I think probably at the end of the day, it came down to people just didn't want to vote a bunch of point guards on there. But... And, you know, maybe Klay Thompson a little bit more visible because he was on the Warriors. But I'd say John Wall deserved to be on there. What say ye, boys?
I think even though it's an award that is supposed to span the whole season and you're supposed to be taking 82 games into account, having gigantic games really helps your case. So when you've got Kyrie with 2 50-point games and Klay with the 37-point quarter, like, those stand out in people's memories as far as, like, who was the best in the NBA this year. Stuff like that's going to stand out, even though they didn't, like, especially, like you said, Klay really definitely didn't have the day-to-day consistency that John Wall had all year long. But I think that's part of it.
Yeah, another person I thought was Russell Westbrook. I mean, how many games did he miss
this
season, right? He missed almost, like, a fourth of the season, 20 games. 18 games.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he was unbelievable for 1 month, right? I mean, that 1 month he was just on another planet, like video game stuff. So I get why he kind of, I think he made, did he make second team?
Yeah.
Westbrook? I mean, I guess it comes into, you know, how many games you got to play. I thought that maybe he was a little bit too high on that. But I think going back to what you're saying, Kyrie making those 50 points on TNT, national TV, beating the Spurs on that shot, going nuts. And also the Warriors, I think John Wall was kind of hurt by team success, I think, in this vote, where the Wizards at the end of the season went in a huge funk. Golden State was the best team. The Cavs played really well at the end of the season. So I think that he was kind of punished by the team falling off by the voting more so than what he did individually.
You know, you're talking about media voters a lot, you know, or covering just one specific team, or, you know, they have to have such a broad scope of the whole NBA. You hate to, you know, boil it down to singular moments, but I think that's what a lot of people do. And, you know, when you think about singular moments, Kyrie's got them. Klay had his. You know, John had that, you know, really great game against the Celtics and, you know, some really great highlight plays. But as much as we talk about how Wall's a, you know, very fun player to watch, he didn't have that, you know, one moment in the same way that some of the other guys did. And I think that kind of hurt him a bit. And it's almost weird that we talk about Wall as the consistent player, but I think he kind of got knocked for that here.
Yeah.
To me, I think maybe from the national scene, that John Wall's maybe moments is, you know, that Celtics game, talking about the girl that died afterwards, and then the Christmas Day game, you know, where he has that crazy highlight against the crappy Knicks.
360.
Look at those happened in the winter, right? Where kind of it's maybe lost in the MVP voters as, you know, they try to start voting in, you know, March and April.
Right. When the Wizards were at their worst. It helped him out with the All-Star game, but kind of came back to bite him when things went south.
He'll use it as...
But I definitely think he's better than Kyrie when it comes to, I mean, overall player. I mean, Kyrie plays no defense, and John Wall had the most assists, or second in the league in assists again. I mean, I think it's definitely warranted that he deserves some recognition on the All-NBA teams. And I think some of the... You wrote a post today, Jake, about that, where you had like Cousins. You had a bunch of tweets from people out there trying to give it before.
Yeah. Although it was interesting, Cousins deleted his afterwards, but
oh, he did.
Yeah.
Damn, that's cold.
Yeah, I don't know.
What kind of bro is that, man? What kind of bro are you? Support me and then not support me.
Gortat had one. Gortat tweeted about it.
Doesn't help the Cousins case, but oh well. But, I there's definitely a lot of support for Wall out there. I think it's just a matter of, you know, some people. To be fair, Kyrie's scoring is just really fun to watch. And I can understand how people, you know, when you're just kind of scanning everybody, you just kind of get attracted to that. But, you know, it's apples and oranges.
Jake, I don't know if we can bring you back on after you said watching Kyrie Irving score is fun. It might be a deal breaker. Fun, like,
it's fun, but it's not useful.
Okay.
What I'd say.
All right.
It's like you watch, you know, like an Adam Sandler movie just to kind of not think about things for an hour and a half. That's Kyrie Irving. But like then you watch John Wall to like really watch like a great cinematic masterpiece.
Wes Anderson?
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, we're looking at the negative. I think it was positive that him getting on the second team all defense, being finally honored in that way. I mean, the Wizards have been one of the top defensive teams for the last few years, definitely under Woodman. And to finally get recognized by a player on it for the first time, I think, in a long time, like 10 years, I think Larry Hughes is the last one, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah,
Larry Hughes.
I thought that was very, very neat to see him finally recognized on that end.
Yeah, I feel like people don't really, they don't get how good he is at defense, and I feel like the easy low hanging fruit is, oh, well, he's never made it an NBA all defense team, and thank God he finally has, because I mean, and that's the consistency that we've talked about. Like he's not, you know, he's not a defensive ace out there per se, where he's, you know, like Andre Iguodala in his prime or something, but he's excellent, or he's good on a night-to-night basis.
I want to know why people are always picking this low-hanging fruit when there's plenty of good fruit growing right up out of the ground.
Like strawberries?
Yeah.
Do you prefer strawberries to apples?
Absolutely.
And oranges as well?
I mean,
it's close.
I think the one positive is, though, is that, well, did he tweet afterwards more motivation or something?
Yeah, he'll definitely use this to motivate him. He always does. That's the one, I mean, not the one, but one thing you can always count on John for is using that snubbery for motivation. He always gets fired up over that.
I know this is kind of changing topics, but it's similar. Why do you guys think, I don't know the answer per se, but why do you think there's been such a negativity towards John throughout his career, or this need to pick on him or exploit his flaws and ignore his positives? I think it's really bizarre because it doesn't really match up to his off-court or on-court personality.
No, I mean, he's a really mellow guy. He's never really in the limelight for anything, and you know, a lot of times it's not even his play. I wonder if it is, I always kind of think it might be kind of a Kentucky thing. A lot of people just don't like Kentucky, although you don't see the same thing for like a Duke player or whatnot, but like Kyrie Irving, obviously. But I feel like it's always kind of boiled back to that. Like he was on a team with, like, people don't like Boogie. People don't like Patrick Patterson. I just feel like there's a disdain for Kentucky John Calipari players, and he just kind of gets lumped into that.
Yeah, and I think with the NBA, there's a natural bias towards freak athletes that there's a perception they haven't maximized their basketball skills. You know, I think Wallace's job developing into not just a guy that's outrunning people, but, you know, really has just an incredible floor game, shoots really effectively from the mid-range now, and just does all these great things. But people say, oh, well, he can't, you know, shoot three-pointers. And suddenly that means that he's not very skilled and he's just getting by on being really fast and jumping really high. And it's just such a silly argument, but that's what, you know, that's what the math is, you know, that's the perception.
Yeah, like he's almost penalized by his gifts. Like he doesn't fit the point guard box that you're supposed to be, that he's getting by doing other things and didn't work as hard or something. Yeah.
Right.
I don't really understand. I don't understand where that comes from. But I do think that there is some Calipari hate that stirred, because if you look back, John was like the first one that was like the one that done for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Calipari's been doing, he was the first, I mean, he was the first one. They kind of, I mean, he obviously, that's why Kentucky fans love him, because he kind of brought back the program, that whole class did, and then have them go year and year keep doing this. But maybe that's where some of the ire starts. I don't know why the some sort of media members or agents or have found ways to, you know, they're not sitting here yelling at Kyrie Irving for not playing defense, right? But yeah, for some reason it was John Wall can't shoot, he dances or something, and you're like, well, I just never really understood any of that, where, you know, never got in trouble. He does, teammates seem to like him. He always says the right things about things. And another underrated part about him, I always find fascinating being around him and asking him questions to him. He's like, how smart basketball wise he is. Like, you ask some players, they'll give you, you know, platitudes and cliches. And John will actually like break it down from a basketball standpoint. Like, he actually knows where everyone should be on court at all times, defensively and offensively. He gets all wonky about basketball, and I'm always really, really impressed when it comes to that aspect of his approach to the game, which sometimes people don't really talk about.
The last thing I have on my list here is just a new Verizon Center sponsor. Any ideas for the new name of the phone booth?
We can't Q-tip. Call it the Q-tip Center. We'll keep your ears ringing. That's my suggestion.
Okay. Do you guys have anything you want to bring to the table besides Verizon Center potential names?
GoDaddy.com? No. Yeah, I kind of want to talk about Otto. I think that his I don't know why I want to talk about Otto, but kind of talks about a lot of other players. You know, his revelation in the playoffs, I think, was one of the positive things that we can take away. Even if you look back, when you look at it from a pure standpoint, you know, they lost 4-2 in the second round, the same as last year, right? But this feels a little different. I think it feels a little different because he's still, you know, yeah, they'll say that we lost that. We should have had a piece of series, and last year, John will say that. And I somewhat believe it, don't really. You know, games here and there. I mean, you could really make the case that they could have beat Atlanta without John Wall. They could have maybe still won the game with a couple of shots going here and there. But the thing that I think is a positive takeaway overall is just the maturation and the development of Otto Porter. And that is something to really be excited about. Now, possibly, I think maybe to trade him, but that's a whole other topic maybe down the road. What do you got for Otto, though, I guess, is what?
Otto gets me sized. Yeah. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I for a lot of the year, he kind of got compared to Nerlens Noel as he started to, really blossom in Philadelphia. But now seeing him in the playoffs, you can really see how great a fit he is next to Wall and Beal. He's just the perfect guy that doesn't need a lot of possessions to have an impact, which you need if you've got Wall and Beal, taking up so much of the ball, which they need to do. And so, you've got a guy that can be so versatile and do so many things. And I think he's still really just starting to scratch the surface of his offensive potential. I think in those games where Wall was out, he showed that he could do a little bit more than, I think a lot of people expected. And so I'm excited to see where he goes next. It kind of depends on whether Pierce comes back or not, how the starting lineup shakes out, but I'm excited to see what he can do.
I'm kind of on the lower end of the spectrum in Otto appreciation, I guess. I feel like it was definitely nice seeing him play the way he did in the playoffs, but I kind of feel like it was more like we caught a brief glimpse of what, like, now is his peak and could be, like, good games for him in the future. I still don't see him really becoming, like, a really stud player. I think we got a glimpse of him being somebody who could be, like, a steady contributor, pretty good for several years, but I don't have high hopes for him as being, like, a, some world-beating defensive whiz and spacer, unfortunately. I wish that I did see that from him.
I think you'd have to be kind of like a Shane Battier kind of guy. And, he doesn't, do a lot of maybe great statistical things, but he kind of just fills a lot of the non-stat happy roles and looks really great on plus-minus. I think that's his kind of, ceiling and role here.
To me, the most impressive thing is his ability to shoot the three, especially the corner three. Because playing with Wall, we've seen it with Ariza, we saw it with Webster, we see it with Beal, that if you play alongside Wall, you're going to get open looks downtown. And offense sometimes designates that on the break, and especially the corner three. And he showed an ability to knock that down on a consistent basis. And his ability to defend, especially DeRozan in that first Raptor series, was really impressive. Especially, he obviously needs to gain more weight, probably develop his handle a little bit. But for once, it was just good to see that he belongs in the league. And, all the things that was said, oh, he's NBA ready, that's why they drafted him. And, he got hurt and kind of had a lost rookie season. Had a good summer league, hit and miss with Randy Whitman throughout the season. A lot of anger towards fans as well. But I think that, and Wall has actually mentioned this a lot, and the thing that's curious about Porter, I think maybe speaks to some of your trepidation, is that he just hadn't played well with the second unit. And he just plays really well. Obviously, everyone plays well with John Wall, but, we're going to need him to be successful when Wall's out or Beal's out. Can Porter carry that load in the second unit? And maybe, I'm a little skeptical on that, but they're going to need him to carry more of an offensive burden when the other main players aren't on the court.
I think he's going to be fine once he's got to work on his 3-point shooting, like you just said. But I think his finishing around the rim and then converting free throws, I think if he can notch those things, he'll be able to play with John very successfully. But you're right on the fact that he's probably going to be on the bench for a little bit while longer. Hopefully, I was kind of annoyed. I don't want to be like, oh, I called it. Like if they would have just played Otto, things would have been fine. But we probably all wanted to see him out there earlier in the regular season, so I'm thankful that we did get to see him. I don't think he peaked in the playoffs. I think it was kind of maybe he kind of put his head through the drywall on the first floor. He's ready to get to the second. We can see that second floor. We can see what he can do. He's going to have to lean on his defense for a while for sure. But I've got high hopes for him. I mean, he's only how old is he? Is he
21, turning 21? Right? Aren't him and Beal like the same age, both turning 21?
They're 21 already. Yeah, after they turn 22.
I think they're both turning 22. Yeah, 21 turning 22.
I mean, if Duncan, if you think this
Taylor Swift.
They're 22, turn 23. Yeah, I think so.
He's got time, guys. He's got time to figure this out. I mean, much like I feel like we kind of give, or I at least myself, I give a kind of a pass to Brad Beal. I'm like, okay, he's not going to really hit his stride till he's, you know, maybe 23 at the earliest. I don't know. Maybe it'll be next year. But I feel like with shooting guards, you know, they kind of hit their stride going forward with age from their early 20s. And I think we should kind of put the same faith in Otto that he will eventually maybe not be the guy, but he'll be a plenty good third option, at least in my eyes.
Well, I guess my question when I was mentioning about trading him is that the fact that he played well and his value's high. Have you ever seen with the Wizards, they wait till their value is really low on players before they try to get rid of them? Would any of you be interested in packaging him some picks, maybe somebody for a cousin?
I think I would be down with that. I love DeMarcus.
I don't know if Sacramento is, but it seems like that relationship might be on the rocks.
I heard Vlade Divac saying, hey, George Karl, don't be so sure that we're not going to trade DeMarcus Cousins. So hopefully the Wizards will put some feelers out at the least.
I mean, I don't know if they have a package to get him, but I know that people probably don't like me saying to trade Otto when he's doing well. But, you know, what if he has a bad season next year? Then where are you at, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of looking if Cousins down, whether or not Cousins can play with Kortar affects, you know, Jake's favorite topic of getting Kevin Durant in 2016. You know, that's for other people to really figure out the salary and the numbers, but I think it's something maybe think about with how the Wizards get that. You know, where are the assets the Wizards are going to take the next step? You know, how is that going to happen? It's just all, there's just, we're going after KD. I know that's plan A, but that's plan A for a lot of people. Like, what's plan B? You know, and do they wait another year to do that? I think that's a lot of things that with this team are kind of still up in the air, especially with Bradley Beal is going to be up for an extension. And there's a lot of important decisions that they have to make here in the next, this offseason and the next.
Well, I'm sure we can convene again to discuss this stuff when the ball gets rolling. I feel like, right? I mean, we've been chatting here for a while. I could talk all night. I'm sure you guys have other better things to get going on this evening. Any final thoughts before we roll out of here? We've been at it for quite a bit.
I just want to give a quick shout out to you, Schwenk. The amount of technology laying here in front of me is staggering. Just to get two separate forms of phone call on the line would have taken me probably a week, and you set up in like 13 minutes. So that's all I have to say.
I'm trying to get
good
it.
Work.
Thanks, man. I'm trying to get it set up in 10 next time. We're up against it.
Yeah, I will second that, and I just wanted to throw a quick hot take out there. Lots of talk yesterday about Stephen Curry bringing his daughter to the podium after the game. I think there's only one practical solution. The reporters need to bring their kids, and then we have the kids interview each other. Take the athletes, take the reporters out. I think it's better for everyone.
That would be adorable.
That's YouTube gold right there.
I don't have a hot take, but I just want to thank you guys for having me. It's been an interesting, fun season. You know, it's sad that it came to an end, but you know, considering I haven't looked at a draft list till this week, and usually I start looking at those about January, February when it comes to following the Wizards. So that is always a breath of fresh air for following this team. And thanks for having me, and go Wiz.
Right on, gentlemen. Well, thanks for coming by. We'll get out of here on that. As I said at the top of the show, Duncan and I and our other co-host, Max Binstock, who shows up sporadically, and Dave Keffer, we're going to convene on Monday. We're going to power hour while we kind of review the Wizards season. So it should be very entertaining.
I think we're going to just cover a pretty vast array of topics, maybe some predictions, some recapping, all sorts of things, right?
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be interesting. We'll see how it goes. Not my brainchild, but we'll give it a shot. So we're gonna do that. We'll be back on a monthly basis until the season returns. I would imagine early, you know, sometime in October. when the wheels start rolling again on the podcast. So that's where we're at from here on out. Like I said, subscribe on iTunes, Overcast, Downcast, Podbay, whichever service you may use. That's the best way to get the pod, especially in the off season when we're off our normal schedule. Follow us on Twitter. That's also nice. Leave us a review if you like what you hear. Thank you to the Baltimore Sports Report. All that jazz. So we'll be back on Monday with you Tuesday. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. For Duncan Perfect Roth, Adam McGinnis from truthaboutit.net, Jake Whitaker from bulletsforever.com, I am CT Schwenk. That was Zarkcast.